State Representative Patrick Windhorst on the other end of the line. Patrick, how are you this morning?
Doing well. How are you?
Good. Yesterday, the governor putting the John Henry on the budget and some other items, but budget is where we're going to go first this morning, calling it a new era of fiscal stability arriving in Illinois.
Well, I voted no on the budget. I disagree with that assessment, mainly because it sets a budget with record spending. And given the fact that we have billions of dollars in unpaid bills, as well as $130 billion pension deficit, my concern was we were increasing state spending and not putting that money toward some of our past due bills and the debt we have. I would disagree with the governor's assessment that it's leading to fiscal stability. In fact, I'd say that we are just increasing spending has been the practice in Springfield for too long.
Yeah, and when you're looking at this, because there was two figures, and matter of fact, even in the press release, I noticed this from the governor's office, that he says we'll generate $150 million in surplus that will be targeted to pay down the portion of the state's remaining bill backlog. But I thought there was $1.5 billion or something like that to go to back bills in this budget.
Well, there was an additional part of the capital package that in the borrowing for the capital that had a provision for payment of the backlog of bills as well. The way I understand it, we're actually borrowing money to pay past bills that we already owe, which I don't know is a good practice either, given the fact we've just passed a record budget number. So I think that might be where the $1.5 billion figure was coming from.
And another figure I read last night saying of this $39.9 billion budget, $9 billion goes to the pensions?
I believe that's correct. That would be my understanding was we were making the full pension payment that was required under the Edgar Ramp going back some years. You know, initially when the governor had proposed his budget in February, he was going to short the pensions and quote unquote restructure the payments, which actually will mean we'll owe more money over the long run as a state. But we had the surprise revenue increase in April, and he backed off those plans to reduce the payments.
25% of this state's budget goes to pensions?
That's right. We have, over time, made a lot of promises, and those promises, the bills for those promises is coming due. And, you know, I'm somebody who believes that the state should keep its word, and if we're going to make promises, we need to keep those promises. Unfortunately, we had politicians years ago who made promises they knew they personally were not going to have to keep because they weren't going to be in office to have to fund them. And now those of us in office are having to make sure those bills are paid.
What did you get in the infrastructure for your district? Because your district has areas of decay. You know this. I'm familiar, more than a little bit familiar with your district. What will you see in infrastructure monies for yours?
Well, there were three of our higher education institutions are going to receive a significant amount of money. SIU Carbondale will receive over $100 million. And then there's also some capital money for Southeastern and Shawnee Community College. There's the roads program, which will be funded through the gas tax, which is going to help our infrastructure here locally on the roadways. And then there are some other smaller capital projects that will be filtered throughout the region. There's also, I've been told, although I've not seen the final figures, some money for the Carroll Port, and I've heard conflicting numbers on what that will be. And when you look at the capital bill itself, there are specific projects that are listed, but there's also some lump sum monies. And so how that will all be expended is to be determined, is my understanding.
What I find interesting, and I read this, and matter of fact, I even had somebody who I was talking to in an interview yesterday, said they're not worried about the gas tax because they're too far away from the state border for people to jump across and purchase other places. That can't be said about your district.
No, this is going to have a tremendous effect on our businesses in my district, particularly the gas stations. They're going to see that they're already uncompetitive with Kentucky and Missouri, and that's going to get even worse if we throw an additional 20 cents a gallon.
You know, and these are the two issues, it appears, that people are railing against the most, the gas tax and pay raises for legislators.
Yeah, I mean, the pay raises, that all played out is just, again, Springfield at its worst. We We saw it early in the week with the abortion bill on last Sunday, and to watch how this pay raise went through is just Springfield politics. So just your listeners know, there was actually no technical vote to raise the pay of the legislators. This is kind of a shell game, I guess. There's a law in effect that provides that legislators will get a cost of living increase, and that was passed over a decade ago. Well, beginning in 2008, every budget cycle, the legislature had put in a cap that prevented the pay raises from going to effect. Well, this year, that was not included in the budget documents. So the automatic pay raise will take effect. Now, we passed a budget in the House first. I don't know if you were aware or no, but we've got a 1,500-page document about 11 hours before we're supposed to vote on it.
Yep.
And had to comb through it. And, of course, we didn't catch that the pay raises weren't prohibited. So we sent that. We voted on it. I voted no. We sent that over to the Senate. The Senate took up the budget documents, and they caught it. So they passed the budget, but then they passed another bill, separate bill, that prevented the pay raises. Those bills come back to the House the next day. We take up the budget to finalize it. We do not take up the pay raise prohibition bill. So it was just, again, a shell game, and I think intentional, designed to get pay raises for legislators.
Well, it was interesting. It was called, Patrick, in an Associated Press report Sunday night, it was called an uncorrected mistake. But then when you see with a process where the governor is signing it, it doesn't look like an uncorrected mistake because they're moving. You can't call it a mistake and go, oh, well, we'll sign it anyway. You know what I mean? There's an intellectual dishonesty there. And the thing is I remember when legislators voted on their own pay raises, people went ape, okay? So what you talked about 10 years ago or so, what they did was they put in automatic raises. The only thing they had to vote on was to stop them. They were going to happen anyway, which you realize, you know, people are looking at that going, oh, well, that's an interesting solution. You never have to vote for your own raise again. It just happens, and the only time you vote is against it. But, you know, that it is indicative of Illinois, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And, you know, back in February, I actually filed a bill to prohibit the pay raise for FY20. And all but one of my Republican colleagues have signed on to that bill. And, you know, I've called for the Speaker to call us back to immediately hear the bill, vote on it, and pass it. I've also asked or called on the governor to line item veto the budget for any expenditures for a pay raise. Of course, the governor signed the budget without the line item veto, and I don't believe we're going to be called back to take up my bill.
Yeah. So, success for you this session was FOID card? Was seeing the FOID card stopped?
Yeah, I was very pleased to see the Senate basically prohibit that from being called. We were worried that after it passed the House, it was just going to be pushed through in the Senate, but thankfully my Senate colleagues did not do that. There has been some talk that this summer they're going to work on other legislation revolving around our background check system to make sure it is fully operational and has all the information we need to prevent felons from acquiring guns through the normal purchase system. But thankfully, this fingerprinting bill did not get passed. It was a bad piece of legislation.
It's interesting because I was just reading to everyone a press release from Gun Save Life. They filed an NRA-supported case challenge. They want to do away. Matter of fact, right now, they want a temporary restraining order and preliminary injunction to put the act on hold. That's the FOID card act. While litigation is underway, saying you shouldn't have a FOID card in the first place. It's interesting because you see pendulums and pushback and wedge issues, right? And in this particular case, the FOID card existed, and, you know, there was we all kind of groused at it. But then when the attempt to strengthen it, what happened was the NRA, the National Illinois State Rifle Association, there was a swing the other way, do away with it all. It's interesting because we see this type of thing in a larger scale, I think, abortions across this country as well. But what do you think the chances are that something like that would happen, the FOID card would be done away with in Illinois? What do you think the chances are in court?
Well, most of the court challenges of the FOID occurred prior to the recent or more recent decisions of the U.S. Supreme Court strengthening our rights to possess firearms. So I think there's a real question about whether the FOID card would withstand that constitutional scrutiny, particularly the case in White County, which has been referenced before, where somebody possesses a firearm in their home. You know, the case law is clear that you have the right to defend yourself in your home with a firearm. I think that there's a real good chance the Supreme Court will say, no, that is not a requirement. It's not constitutional that you have to have a FOID card, a government-issued ID, to possess a firearm in your own home.
Yeah. I do know there's another state that has something like it. Do you know which state that is and what it is like?
You know, I unfortunately don't have that information in front of me, but there are four states that require a FOID card for long guns, and then there are additional states that require them only for handguns.
Okay.
Some of those are being challenged now, and where it all play out, I guess, is going to be for the federal courts to determine. But it's the move is toward protecting our gun rights, thankfully, in the federal courts, and hopefully that trend continues.
Human beings always imagine a thing before they do it. If you're going to go out and buy a car, you imagine going to the car lot. You imagine talking to the salesperson. We did the same thing about grocery stores, a first date, a political speech, whatever it is, a movie. We kind of go there first in our minds. This is your first session. What you imagined it was like and what it was like, how big is the difference between those two?
You know, in some ways there was a pretty big gulf. I would have thought going in that I knew there would be a lot of rush sessions and things would be thrown at us at the last minute, but I thought generally things would operate with as much information as we need. And, you know, there are a lot of votes that we're called on to take, particularly in committee, where you have a very limited amount of time before the committee is called to know what you're voting on and to research it and then expected to make an informed vote. That is a disappointing part of the process. And then, you know, given the way the last week runs, and I understand it has basically always ran, where major pieces of legislation are thrown at us all through the last week, where we have very little time to read, let alone study or research any of it, you know, that is, I think, a bad practice. I think it's done intentionally by leadership on the other side. To keep us kind of in the dark. And, you know, I heard this phrase, well, that's the way it's always done. And clearly the way it's always done is not working, and we need to change the way it's done, because we had many days of session in February and March where there was additional time to work on major pieces of legislation, and we did not. We did committee work, but we didn't take up some of these major pieces. So that is one thing to see in practice that has been eye-opening, is how much can just thrown at us as legislators.
Well, negotiating.
Parts of it have been surprising and to the good side. I mean, yeah, there are people that I disagree with vehemently on the other side. And, you know, some of those people are friendly, nice. You know, we argue, we debate, but, you know, I wouldn't say use the word enemy. I think that would be the wrong use of the word. But to see people try to work together in a collaborative fashion, even though leadership often prevents that from happening, has been rewarding too.